the world. And the time now is 7 minutes past one.
Miami City Ballet presents Program 4, Broadway and Ballet, featuring audience favorites. Jerome Robbins' Piano Ballet Dances at a Gathering and George Balanchine's Rowdy Slaughter on 10th Avenue from the hit Broadway musical On Your Toes. Program 4 opens April 5th in Palm Beach, April 26th in Fort Lauderdale, and May 3rd in Miami. Tickets at MiamiCityBallet.org or 877-929-7010.
Raza.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, our classical arts contributor Charles Greenfield talks with the Florida Grand Opera's Justin Moss about Verdi's La Traviata, which begins April 20th and continues through May 5th in Miami-Dade and Broward counties. Jazz writer Bob Weinberg speaks with the darling of the jazz world, Esperanza Spalding, about her Grammy-winning career. She'll play the Arsht on the 19th. And our Palm Beach Arts Calendar features Bill Nix, Vice President of the Palm Beach County Cultural Council. The Rhythm Foundation has been producing exciting world music concerts for the past 25 years here in South Florida. They especially focus on cultures connecting to our area's audiences, featuring music from Latin America, the Caribbean, Brazil, Africa, Asia, and Europe. Their annual Heineken Transatlantic Festival started last night with their kickoff party in downtown Miami and continues tonight and tomorrow at the beautiful North Beach Bandshell on Miami Beach, wrapping up Sunday in Wynwood, and they'll be streaming the festival live on WynwoodRadio.com. With us today to share the excitement is the Rhythm Foundation's director, Laura Quinlan, and welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat, Laura.
Thanks, Ed. It's great to be here with you.
Great, as always, to have you with us. Let's start off with, despite lean economic times, it seems the Rhythm Foundation always perseveres, continuing to present great events. How's it going for your organization these days?
Can't complain. We're here, we're working, we're busy, people are coming out. It is important to note that a lot of our programs have become free. We have our free monthly event, Big Night in Little Haiti, thanks to the support of the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation and some fantastic corporate sponsors that make this possible, the City of Miami at the Little Haiti Cultural Center. Great crowds, and that's a monthly event.
Usually what, on?
Every third Friday.
Every third Friday.
We have our series up at the Hollywood Arts Park, Hollywood Arts Park Experience, four fantastic big festival-type shows every year, working closely with the Hollywood CRA and the City of Hollywood. So we've really dug down and found some fantastic community partners that allow us to do our programming in an even more accessible way. You know, back when times were good, people didn't really like free shows. They thought that meant no good. Now everybody loves free.
Sure. and you're producing great family events, too. So, well, for instance, in the beautiful Hollywood Arts Park, that's just a great location. People bring their whole family in the chairs and a picnic basket and all of that. Your Heineken Transatlantic Festival is your big yearly festival, so let's run down the various events. Tonight you're back at the beautiful North Beach Bandshell. And tell us a bit about that, because you grew up on Miami Beach.
I actually grew up in North Beach. And as we were just discussing, it is one of the iconic oceanfront bandshells that you used to see more of them. And this is really the remaining one. It's really a special venue for Miami Beach. It's an oceanfront amphitheater. It's very MIMO, very mid-century modern.
Is it considered more MIMO than deco?
It's very MIMO,
okay.
Yeah. I've heard it was originally built as a soundstage for the Mike Douglas show.
Really?
Yeah, those like towers were TV towers. And they used to have some really hilarious old signage stashed away in their closet. I love working there. I grew up in the neighborhood. I used to go roller skating there on Friday nights. And then Saturday nights was old people ballroom dancing night.
Ah, and did you dance?
No. I went roller skating. But the City of Miami Beach did a really lovely job with renovations that they completed just in time for our festival last year. It's nice to give props when a government does a renovation project on time, and it's really well done. The bandshell looks very much as it always did, but the structure is so much easier to work at. A lot of the renovations are not really so visible to the naked eye, but the building is fantastic. There's a backstage. The quality of the sound is better. There's infrastructure. It's bathrooms. It's just become one. Well, we have always loved the Mantle.
It's a even great better. Site. Great yeah. site. Very comfortable. Parking right across the street to the west. Restaurants nearby. I mean, you can make a whole night of it. It seats about 800?
Oh, no. It's more than that.
More than that now?
Somewhere. Well, nobody sits down at our
nobody,
shows.
Everybody dances,
please.
Of course. They're roller skating.
No, it's not us. I mean, you can sit down, but it's sure. hard to sit down with these shows.
Oh, yeah.
That's about 1,200 to 1,500 people can fit in there.
Let's talk about who's there tonight. As we mentioned, you had your launch party at Blackbird Ordinary in downtown Miami last night with the Psychic Mirrors. But tonight, who do you present?
Tonight we have one of my personal favorite bands ever, which is Bajo Fondo. It's an electro tango collective from Buenos Aires and Montevideo, right, both sides of the Rio Plata in Argentina and Uruguay. It's a very cool collective of musicians, DJs, VJs, under the direction of the legendary Gustavo Santaolalla, who has won Oscars for his soundtrack work, Grammys for his production work, and I think this began as kind of a pet project that just grew into something magnificent. And they've been on a tour this last month that has just blown everybody away in support of their new CD, which is Magnificent Presente. Really a great band, Bajo Fondo.
And tomorrow
and
night?
We have an opening set tonight by a group called The Hongs, which is a really lovely, locally based three-piece group. Tomorrow night, we're back. Bomba Estéreo, very cool
back
group.
Back again?
Back
wonderful
at the band.
Shell.
Yeah, yeah, Bomba Estéreo. We have worked with them in the past. I just love them. They're from Bogota, Colombia. Again, a mix of electronica, dub, hip-hop with the classic rhythms of Colombia. Cumbia, champeta, really very cool modern world music sound. These two groups are just like exactly the sound that we have in our heads when we think Heineken Transatlantic Festival. We have an opening set from a very cool chick from Brazil via New York named Suzuka Poderosa. It's called Carioca Bass. And then we have also a very cool locally based group. Actually, they're Peruvians and Colombians living in Miami, and the group is called Crisp, an electro new music band. Really fun music.
And tomorrow's after show party is at your favorite, the Sandbar Lounge, which
classic,
is nearby.
Classic North Beach dive bar. Great ambiance. Great place to unwind after a night at the band shell.
Laura, you're always introducing South Florida to great new music. A few years ago, you brought in Bossa Cuca Nova, and they were such a delight. An electronic samba, bossa, nuevo music band. Just marvelous. And you continue to do that. Now, Sunday, April 7th, you have your wrap-up party and a barbecue with...
Oh, this story just keeps getting better. We're going to be at Gramps, which is a super hipster
brand new place.
Bar in Wynwood. We wanted to tie in our opening and closing with some of the new upcoming neighborhoods of Miami, you know, where the hipsters hang out. And that's why we launched in Brickell at Blackbird and close at Gramps.
The proprietor is Adam...
Gersten.
Yes.
Very cool guy.
Good luck to him.
Yeah, he has a really lovely place. So we're going ahead with our plans for our wrap-up party and barbecue with Beat Machines, which is it's a side project of one of Miami's most notable electro bands, Afro Beta, and DJ Mr. Power. And we also have found out that our party will be joined by another party, which is... Dum-da-dum-da-dum, Jimbo's 86th birthday party.
Wow. So Jimbo's are going to drag Jimbo down there.
It should be a night to remember.
Wow, how fun. And as I've heard that this festival will be streamed live on WynwoodRadio.com. Is that just Sunday night or?
Oh, all the nights.
Oh, my gosh. How wonderful. Go there. And
yeah, it's important to reach people all over the world if they can't make it to the band shell.
Laura Quinlan, the director of the Rhythm Foundation, our guest today. For more info, go to rhythmfoundation.com. May I give out your phone number?
305-672-5202.
Or you can also go to transatlanticfestival.com. Laura, thank you so much for joining us. Great fun.
Thanks for having me on, Ed. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, yeah, mi raza.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, our jazz contributor Bob Weinberg speaks with the darling of the jazz world, composer, musician, and vocalist Esperanza Spalding, who will bring her talents to the Arsht on April 19th. Our arts calendar today features Bill Nix with enticing events in Palm Beach County. Now, our classical arts contributor Charles Greenfield has the details about the Florida Grand Opera's blockbuster close to their season and enticing information about their 2013-2014 season as well.
Libiamo, libiamo negli echi carici che la bellezza i fiora.
Opera fans are in for a fantastic finale with Verdi's La Traviata starting April 20th and ending May 5th as the Florida Grand Opera celebrates the end of its 72nd season in their home of over 5 years at the Arts Center's Ziff Ballet Opera House and the Broward Center for the Performing Arts. After a full season starting last fall with Puccini's La Bohème, Mozart's The Magic Flute, and Bellini's La Sonnambula, the FGO ends with the tale of the courtesan Violetta and her tragic dilemma in her love affair with Alfredo. As the opera unfolds, Verdi's genius for dramatic arias and duets that perfectly encapsulate the fluctuating emotions of love comes to the fore in the exciting three acts held together by father and son Giorgio Germont and Alfredo and the fallen woman Violetta. The Florida Grand Opera production dates back to 2008 with its impressive costuming and stage assets conjuring the magnificence of high society's salon life in 19th century Paris. The main players in the upcoming production are Violetta, Maria Alejandris and Suzanne Vinnick, Alfredo, Yvonne Magri and John Bellamer, Germont Giorgio, Alfredo's father, Joan Kang and Giorgio Calduro. To make sense of the wonderfully moving Verdi opera La Traviata, I recently spoke to Justin Moss, director of Broward Operations and South Florida's leading opera raconteur. Justin Moss, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Glad to be back, Charles. Thank you for having me.
What does Verdi represent in Italian opera? Could you describe the range and depth of his works? The former New Yorker music critic Andrew Porter used words like vitality, tension, dramatic impetus.
In many ways, Charles, Verdi really defined Italian opera. He came along at a time when opera was, when all of music was going through a lot of transition. And Verdi inherited the bel canto style, which was the style mainly developed by Rossini and then inherited by Donizetti and Bellini. And it was so popular and so dominated Italian opera that new composers coming along had to write in that style or the audiences wouldn't go. And so Verdi's early works incorporate a lot of bel canto style, but then he starts getting a little bit more romantic. He'd been listening to the music of Richard Wagner, and this had had a big influence on him. So he starts moving away from that style, which now was sounding a little archaic to audiences, and developing something completely new. His opera Nabucco, the story of Nebuchadnezzar from the Old Testament, was the opera that made him famous. But that rich middle period that produced Rigoletto, Traviata, and Il Trovatore really demonstrated something totally new in the world of Italian opera.
Well, that's quite interesting. I know that Verdi's La Traviata in its day was considered almost immoral with its topic of a fallen woman. And then again, Mozart, Don Giovanni, that preceded it.
A lot of fallen women.
A lot of fallen women. A non-romantic view of Traviata would argue that Germont, Alfredo's father, was correct in his parental concern. This was a high-class prostitute with TB. She was affecting the family's reputation in a very bourgeois society by carrying on an affair with the son. And if you go further, the opera really concentrates quite deeply, though, I think, on the question of mortality.
I think it really does. And I think one of the reasons the opera has been so successful, first of all, the story is immensely gripping and based on a true incident in the life of Alexandre Dumas the Younger, the son of the man who wrote The Three Musketeers. He had had an affair with Marie Duplessis, as she came to be known. She'd come to Paris as a 15-year-old girl, fresh from the country. pretty steeped in the ways of the world already, had a series of well-connected and immensely wealthy protectors, and died tragically almost as quickly as she had risen, age of 24, leaving a lot of broken hearts in her wake. Dumas had written a novel about their relationship. He saw how successful that was. He created a play, which was even more sensational. And we believe Verdi saw the play in 1852 when he was in Paris. The play was running then. And the next year, he had an opera commissioned from La Fenice in Venice. And La Traviata was the story that he created.
Well, we do start off again in Act 1 with a Brindisi, Libiamo Neliete Calice, in the beginning of Act 1. It sets the mood. It's a neat narrative trick with the orchestra, and it draws the audience.
It's a drinking song, and you'll find a lot of people here in South Florida who relate to drinking songs.
Exactly. And then as we get into Act 1, you can see that the soprano voice really dominates. You've got to have some very strong pipes to get through these arias and duets of the next three acts. From my rough count, Violetta sings 5 times in Act 1, 8 times in Act 2, and 8 times in Act 3. That's 21 singing roles in the opera. That's just quite unimaginable.
Yeah, she's got a lot of music. And the big challenge, though, is that it's a trick role. It really requires the strengths of two very different kinds of voices. In Act 1, she has her big cabaletta Sempre Libera, which is a real coloratura showpiece. But then in Act 2, she has really pretty dramatic music that is usually sung by sopranos with a very different voice type than the gals who sing all of that coloratura where the voice moves so quickly. It's a big challenge for sopranos. But as she goes through the opera, of course, she undergoes heartbreak and she undergoes the ravages of this disease, and Verdi incorporates all of this profound, highly visible change in her music that you can simply follow her decline and tragic degradation just through the music Verdi writes for her.
Now, Alfredo, he does profess his love in Act 1, Undi Felice, but Violetta sort of mocks him, and it's not a great way to start off a love affair. And I think Verdi beautifully sets up the dueling emotions of sort of this ideal love and the cynical reality that's behind all of this.
Right. Violetta has her big set piece in Act 1. The first part of her aria is a slow piece that begins, "Ah, forse lui, ah, perhaps he is the one. I have felt something I have never known before. And perhaps this is the man I'm going to finally really love and experience love with for the first time." She gets a grip on herself, though, as she's about to go over the abyss and bursts into the cabaletta with the words, "Sempre libera, folly, this is all stupidity. I'll always be free, running from pleasure to pleasure." And the contrast between these two moods is so shocking that it's really one of the most effective scenes in all of opera.
Now, in Act 2, we have Alfredo's father, Germont, who skillfully convinces Violetta to give up her love for Alfredo and afterwards tries to persuade his son in the aria Di Provincia del Mar. That's a role that Dmitri Vorostovsky has seized at the Met recently.
Absolutely.
And what is the purpose of Germont?
Germont comes along and lays probably the ugliest guilt trip in all of opera on this poor Violetta. He says to her, "You despoil the family's reputation. You ruin the chances of Alfredo's sister making a good marriage. And after all, look at you and look at what you are. You know, you're only going to grow older. And you know how men are. They begin to look around. He's going to leave you anyway. So why don't you do the right thing and leave him now and spare the family the ruin that you bring upon it?" And she's absolutely crushed. She's devastated, but agrees to make this great sacrifice on one condition. "Conosci il sacrificio," she sings. "Let him know of the sacrifice that I have made."
And then in Act 3, Addio del Passato, you have Grandio, Morirsi Giovani, a series of these great arias
right,
as she descends basically to her death.
Right. She laments that, you know, she's saying goodbye to everything she's known and loved in the world and regrets dying so young. And it's a really pathetic, tragic scene that closes this opera. It's one of the most moving ever written.
And the music is absolutely superb. And before we leave today, I just thought we'd mention again the performance starts here in Dade County.
We open on April the 20th with performances going through the 27th, and then we have three performances in Fort Lauderdale of La Traviata on May 2nd, the 4th, and a special non-subscription added performance, which is a Sunday matinee on May 5.
And I wouldn't be fair to our listeners if I didn't ask you for a little hint about next season.
I'll give you a little more than a hint, Charles. We open with Marvin David Levy's Morning Becomes Electra, which was commissioned for the Met's first season in Lincoln Center. We continue with Verdi's Nabucco. Then we present Wagner's Tristan and Isolde for the first time.
Hooray!
In the company. And we close with Puccini's beloved Tosca.
Well, I am thrilled that Wagner has returned to South Florida after several decades, it seems.
Well, we did a Flying Dutchman about 18 years ago.
Well, I was not too far off. But anyway, I want to thank you, Justin, again for being on South Florida Arts Beat.
My pleasure, Charles. Always a great treat to be back.
While difficult economic times may seem less than conducive for folks going to the opera, the Florida Grand Opera is certainly worth a go with its reasonable ticket prices and, more importantly, engaging artistic interpretations. Despite the reduction from 5 to 4 productions in recent years, the FGO seems determined to manage their way in a conservative and sensible fashion to survive both regional and national tougher times. Years of solid and successful productions are its trademark, and it's not hard to imagine that the FGO will continue its quest to remain one of the country's leading opera companies. The final season production of La Traviata here in Dayton, Broward will definitely further that goal. For information on tickets and scheduling, contact 305-854-7890 or go to their website at fgo.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up on the show, our Palm Beach Arts Calendar today features Bill Nix, Vice President of the Palm Beach County Cultural Council. Now, jazz writer Bob Weinberg talks with the darling of the jazz world who will perform at the Arsht on Friday, April 19th.
In this video, roses.
On the cover photo for her 2012 recording Radio Music Society, Esperanza Spalding sits cross-legged atop an enormous old-school boombox. The album title and the image, not to mention the kickoff number Radio Song, an unabashed love letter to the medium, provide an indication of the 28-year-old bassist, vocalist, and composer's direction on her third major label recording. While it may be more commercial than her previous offerings, Spalding hardly sacrifices the jazz credibility she's established over the past several years. Her sophisticated compositions and arrangements for a dynamic 12-piece band, not to mention her vocal phrasing and seasoned chops on upright and electric bass, all bespeak a seasoned jazz professional, albeit one who requires no knowledge of a secret handshake to fully appreciate.
City of roses, 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 city of roses.
Grammy voters saw it that way, too. They named Radio Music Society the best jazz vocal album and bestowed best instrumental arrangement accompanying a vocalist honors to the track City of Roses, Spalding's affectionate ode to her hometown of Portland. Spalding had made an enormous splash at previous Grammy shows as well. Last year, she performed a moving version of What a Wonderful World during the In Memoriam segment. And in 2011, she took Best New Artist honors, a title never before awarded to a jazz musician. It was a crowning achievement for the bassist, who's been impressing older colleagues and peers in the jazz world for more than a decade. After winning a scholarship to Berklee College of Music in Boston, she became the school's youngest instructor at age 20. She's performed and recorded with jazz world royalty, including Pat Metheny, Stanley Clarke, and Jack DeJohnette. And she holds down the bass chair in Joe Lovano's vaunted Us Five band. In February, Wayne Shorter debuted a piece he composed for her and the Los Angeles Philharmonic. And she closed out the 10th anniversary of the Portland Jazz Festival last month by performing with ACS, her trio with pianist Jerry Allen and drummer Terry Lynn Carrington. A local girl made good, Spalding played before a sold-out house at the Newmark Theater in the town where her story began. Esperanza Spalding, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you.
Well, we have to congratulate you on all of your wonderful success at the Grammy Awards.
Hey, thank you. Yes, that was really a beautiful experience.
Was it surprising for you to find yourself there once again, you know, taking the award?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was especially surprised when I initially found out that my teacher had been nominated also. That was, yeah, like the most pleasant surprise. I was so grateful that his contribution to the record and just his musicianship overall had been acknowledged, you know, by his peers. That was really special.
And please tell us his name. He's on the arrangement for City of Roses.
City of Roses. Yes, his name is Dr. Thera Memory. And, you know, the amazing thing, too, just in terms for the nod to sort of jazz education, I guess, is he did the arrangement, but also it's his student big band playing that he was directing on the record. So it's also a testament to just his mastery as a teacher to get that much music on that high of a caliber out of a bunch of teenagers, you know.
Wow. And that's also sort of your ode to the city of Portland.
It is, yeah. So, you know, it's a different program than what I was in as a child, but sort of a similar premise. So it's like I figured nothing would be more like a finer circle than asking my teacher to bring that ensemble that I had been through to play on the song about my hometown. You know what I mean?
Yes. Wow. Did you feel taking the Best Vocal Jazz Album again this year was somewhat of a validation for Radio Music Society? I know this was kind of moving you in a little bit of a different direction from before.
Oh, I don't know. It's so hard with awards. Gosh, it's like... I don't know, it's like maybe there was a better vocal jazz album out last year, but not as many people were aware of it because they didn't have a big advertising campaign or whatever as I did. So it's sort of like the word best is a little like, makes it kind of, not quite. But what I do really appreciate is just that many people digging it and saying, yeah, I want to check the box next to her name. You know what I mean? So that's the part that goes, oh, yeah, that feels good. You know what I mean? But I don't like the best part. That's not realistic, you know?
Sure. Well, we should tell people that Radio Music Society band is stocked with some great jazz players. Leo Genovese, Tia Fuller, your band director.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Wow, I don't even know what to say. I mean, I look at the band when we're doing sound check, and I just go, how did this happen? I'm just so excited, like... You know, and I think one of the luxuries of being able to create a band that you want, you know, is you hire people that inspire you, you know,
sure.
Personally, philosophically, musically. So this is a band of musicians that I've come to love over the years just from being around and playing. And I finally felt like I had a work that was worth their while. And it's such a blessing to be able to go out and professionally make art together, you know.
Sure.
And I also feel like maybe some people pay and come out to the concert to hear me, but they also get this incredible lineup. You know, it's like
right.
Getting to hear all these incredible musicians for the price of one, you know?
Yes, and also my condolences. I know Jeff Lee Johnson had passed
yeah.
away earlier this year. We should say he was a great session guitar player who had played on the album. Who is playing guitar with the band presently?
Well, we're kind of between players, so I'm not exactly sure who's going to be there by that time, honestly. It's such an unfortunate... I mean, he wasn't just a session player. Maybe he didn't have a big name as a band leader, but he played with everybody from McCoy Tyner to Chaka Khan to George Duke. I mean, living legend. Unbelievable.
Wow,
such a tragic loss. personally and musically, man. Nobody was playing guitar like that. So it's hard to fill those shoes, man. So I don't know exactly who's going to be there on that date, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and he was a heavy cat who played with a lot of heavy cats, and as you have as well. Now, I guess chief among them, we should mention Joe Lovano.
Yeah.
And the Us Five Band. How did that all come about?
Oh, well, I have been playing with Joe in various formats. You know, just he called me for gigs. So we started off playing a lot with this trio with Francisco Mela.
Yes.
And then he started calling me for some quartet dates with James Wideman, and sometimes Otis Brown would play, and sometimes Mela would play. And then, I guess about 5 years ago, or maybe even, I think our first week as the quintet was in 2008. Oh, my goodness. And he had this idea of the two drummer thing. And, of course, over time, it's evolved a lot.
I mean,
that's a lot to ask a band to figure out just spatially, sonically, texturally, how to make that really work. But wow, he had the vision and he led us, and now I can't believe it. I mean, we just did a couple nights at Lincoln Center here in New York a couple weeks ago, and just again, I mean, every time I hear him, I'm totally blown away. But it's so incredible that he could have heard the way that we're playing. It's so much more than just two drummers. So it always amazes me that somehow he could even wrap his mind around this and bring it to fruition. It's really exciting. And, you know, we've ended up playing some venues that aren't really jazz venues, and people kind of don't know what to expect at the beginning.
Sure.
But at the end, the sentiment is always like, whoa, that was amazing, you know. And I love to be present to watch that happen, too, just to watch the impact he has on people, you know.
And I'd imagine that you also have that experience with Radio Music Society and your previous efforts as well, in that you've been able to bring your music to audiences far vaster than the jazz audience.
Yeah, I feel like any musician who sort of keeps at it and gets the kind of support that I've had will inevitably reach beyond whatever genre label they start in. You know what I mean? I mean, I sort of listen so long, mainly because most artists don't think of themselves in a category. It's like we study what we're attracted to. We absorb what calls us, you know? And it's never going to remain within a genre, quote unquote. That's unrealistic. I mean, everybody loves more than the genre, quote unquote, that they are categorized within. So I think if they have the freedom to allow those elements that speak to them to make their way into the music, inevitably, it's going to start attracting a wider base of listeners. You can look at Diane Reeves. I mean, didn't Taylor Swift start as country folk music? You know,
that's
Bob
right.
Dylan, Joni Mitchell, somebody categorizes them as folky musicians, folk music. And look, I mean, everybody knows them and at least knows them and loves them, you know. So I think that hopefully is a sign that somebody's doing something right, that inevitably you sort of spill over the stone walls of genres, you know, and all that implies in terms of, you know, where marketing goes and who is the target audience that a promoter is going to try to reach with advertising. So,
right.
You know, it's not fun to hear about those details because it's art and it's sacred, but that's the reality of who. You know, how do I end up seeing an advertisement for Corinne Bailey Rae, Carrie Underwood, or,
right.
I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you've had opportunities to kind of reach these other audiences with spotlights like Austin City Limits.
Uh-huh.
And
right.
Also, has it aired yet, the groundbreaking music for the Aspire Network, the program that you were starting?
I think it has, yeah. I feel bad because I was so tired when I was filming that. I had flown in from somewhere and I was going somewhere and I just... Gosh, I so admire and support the premise and the mission with that channel. And I hope they'll call me back to do some more when I'm not totally exhausted.
But that was your chance to sort of give a nod to people like Earth, Wind & Fire, for instance, or Alvin Ailey Dance Company.
Right. Well, it's always, there are so many names that we know, you know, that we've heard, that we're aware of, and have no idea, A, what it sounds like, and B, their story. And I think our relationship to even something that should be as objective as music or dancing, our relationship and our emotional experience of the music is impacted by the story, by what we know about the context, historical, cultural, philosophical. Yeah.
Esperanza Spalding, thank you so much for joining us today on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Esperanza Spalding will perform at 8:30 p.m. on April 19th at the Knight Concert Hall at the Adrian Arsht Center in Miami. Call 305-949-6722 or visit arshtcenter.org. This is Bob Weinberg for South Florida Arts Beat.
Bob Weinberg is a writer and editor for Jazz Is Magazine and the online publication Jazz and Blues Florida. You can contact him at bobweinberg@mac.com. For more information about Esperanza Spalding, go to esperanzaspalding.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And we welcome back Mr. Bill Nix, Vice President of the Palm Beach County Cultural Council. Bill, it's been too long.
Yes, it has, but I tell you, Ed, it's like the song, I'm on the road again. Fighting for the arts. I was in Tallahassee the last 2 weeks, and you caught me at a good time because I'm headed to Washington, D.C. next week. So I kind of feel like, if you're going to excuse the pun, between a rock and a hard place, going from Tallahassee to Washington in regards to cultural funding and policies. But really, Tallahassee was very promising. I went up there for Tourism Day on March the 9th to connect the dots between arts, culture, heritage, tourism, and state funding. And Tallahassee is all excited about Viva Florida 500. And Spain's first landing in the Pensacola area, Ponce de León's exploration. So that actually occurred at this month of April in 1513. So Viva Florida 500 to everybody. But this state is expecting an increase in the 89 million tourists that came in here last year. And arts, culture, and certainly heritage and history venues and sites all over the state will contribute to this celebration. And the state will allow themselves to remind the country that this nation did not begin with Plymouth Rock or Jamestown, but about 160 years earlier in Florida. So we made that connection clear to our Florida legislatures, and we're ready to be part of that celebration. And then last week I was in Arts Day in Tallahassee, and we had about 90 attendees that went office to office discussing the economic, quality of life, educational, tourism, and community revitalization impact that the arts brings to every county in Florida. Sean Berry, who is our manager of arts education, and I visited House representatives and senators on a number of issues, but one was stressing the importance of adding the arts to the curriculum of science, technology, engineering, and math that is commonly known as STEM, but we want to add the A and turn STEM into STEAM. And that is really catching on because the arts bring that innovation and creativity to the 21st century workforce. So we're going to take that same message to D.C. next week at Arts Advocacy Day and go on the Hill and talk about how important the arts are. Of course, you know, they're in this whole budget sequestration effort. So we want to just make sure we maintain what we've got for the arts and go forward for the arts. So it'll be exciting, interesting to say the least, but enough for politics. let's get to some fun stuff. And one of the great benefits of living in South Florida, I think, is that we don't have to wait until the summertime to have fun at outdoor festivals. I mean, we can have them all year round, and for Palm Beach County, especially during the spring season. So I want to touch on several that are right around the corner and invite all of our listeners to either come up to visit or come down to visit or come from the west coast of the state to visit. We're having a season of festivals here. And right now, let me just mention to our listeners that they can check out all these activities that we have and festivals, visit their websites, and even purchase tickets by going on a new site that we have called artscalendar.com/the Palm Beaches. That's artscalendar.com/the Palm Beaches. So let's start on the south end of Palm Beach County this weekend, where visitors can enjoy the 51st annual Delray Affair, taking place today through Sunday in downtown Delray Beach, which of course was named the most fun small town in America by Rand McNally's annual Best of the Road contest, and nicknamed the greatest show under the sun. The Delray Affair is the largest arts and crafts festival in the southeast United States. It's free, takes place along downtown streets of Delray Beach, and stretches about 12 city blocks from the Intercoastal all the way to Old School Square. And on the north end, this same weekend in Jupiter, is the second annual Jupiter Seafood Festival, scheduled to take place Saturday and Sunday at Abacoa Town Center. It runs from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday until 8 p.m. on Sunday. Musical performances by the Marshall Tucker Band and the Ultimate Journey Tribute Band, to name a few, and will provide live, family-friendly entertainment. Of course, fresh local seafood, children's activities, and nautical vendors, and everybody will have a great time and a great weekend here in Palm Beach County, either north or south or both. Also, if you have to go inside, but the week of April 4th through the 11th is for film enthusiasts of various genres, when the 18th annual Palm Beach International Film Festival comes to actually a city near you in Palm Beach County. It kicks off on the 4th at 7 p.m. with the opening night film and party, Decoding Annie Parker, and that's going to be at City Place. Then it follows that with an opening night festivities, including guests picking up a trolley and going to the luxurious rooftop of Two City Plaza for cocktails and delicacies from some of our culinary partners. But the festival boasts an exciting and diverse program with screenings taking place in a number of places around Palm Beach County. Next weekend, in the county's central quarter right here in downtown Lake Worth, get ready for 3 days of reggae music at Reggae Fest. It's now in its 15th year here in Lake Worth, and it features some of the best national and regional talent in the world. And this year's festival lineup includes Dirty Heads and the international reggae superstars Third World. So you can't miss that, right on the beautiful Lake Worth Lagoon, right in Vine Park. And back on the north end, just south of Jupiter in Juneau Beach, the home of the Loggerhead Marine Life Center, they're hosting their 10th annual Turtle Fest, scheduled to take place April 13th from 10 to 6. And this is a day-long event providing an exciting opportunity to support conservation efforts and educational programs about being green. And they can enjoy close encounters with threatened sea turtles, live music from such bands as Making Faces, and the environmental-themed artwork, and much, much more at this actually very unique place. This is one of three in the world where turtles come back and nest, three largest areas where turtles can be seen nesting. And we're going to have a festival just as turtle season begins. And again, you can go to our artscalendar.com/the Palm Beaches for more information. At the beginning of next month, we're going to wrap up the spring festival with Florida's largest waterfront music and arts festival, Sunfest 2013, where music meets the waterfront for its annual festival, and that's going to be May 1st through May 5th. And this year's thrilling musical lineup includes Train, Smashing Pumpkins, The Offspring, and Black Crowes. And that's just a start. The five-day festival offers something for everybody. There's a juried art and craft show that's going to feature about 130 national artists, including jewelry, painting, pottery, photography, sculpture, the whole gamut of all kinds of arts offering. There'll be art demonstrations offered on Saturday and, of course, Sunday. And then there's this very special fireworks show that comes Sunday at 9 p.m. And Sunfest hosts one of the largest fireworks shown on the East Coast. So it's going to light up the sky on Sunday at about 9 o'clock. But Sunfest brings everybody, and everybody has a good time. It's always fun. Very infrequently does the rain do anything but kind of let us feel a little cool. So we have it all here, Ed, in Palm Beach County, but start your visit right here at the Cultural Council's new Cultural Information Center. We just opened one up. It's in our headquarters building at 601 Lake Avenue in Lake Worth. We have a touch screen explore board that you can peruse for arts and cultural venues. You can pick up literature here, brochures, maps, calendar events, our issue of Art and Culture magazine, and you can just come here and find out all the great things that are happening in Palm Beach County and start it right here. So, Ed, it's spring festival days in Palm Beach County.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Florida's cultural capital, so we invite everybody to get out, enjoy this great weather, and enjoy paradise in Palm Beach County.
Special thanks to Bill Nix, Vice President of the Palm Beach County Cultural Council, for all of that entertainment information. And safe trips to you up to D.C. and back, my friend.
Thank you, Ed.
Miami-Dade College celebrates Miami's cultural innovations of the past with a new documentary highlighting the contributions of Ruth Greenfield, a pioneer of integration and the arts. The documentary, Instruments of Change, screens tonight, Friday, April 5th at 8 p.m. at the Wolfson Campus Auditorium, room 1261 on the Miami-Dade College Wolfson Downtown Miami campus. Well, the one-hour documentary by Steve Waxman chronicles two institutions started by Ruth Greenfield, the Fine Arts Conservatory and the Lunchtime Lively Arts Series. The event is by invitation only, so you must go to info@shadowwavemedia.com or call 954-817-7568. Also, you can go online at mdc.edu/Wolfson/general info for more information. As well, the Black Archives presents Expressions, an evening of spoken word and jazz at the historic Ward Rooming House Gallery in Overtown on April 13th at 7 p.m. For more info, call 305-636-2390 or go online to theblackarchives.org. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. Adrian Kennedy is our executive producer. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Special thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Charles Greenfield, Bob Weinberg, and Bill Nix. Call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information to 305-995-2221 or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, we'll feature topical currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.